السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. الحمد لله، الحمد لله وكفى، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا المصطفى صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه وبارك وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون. صدق الله العظيم. علماء الكرام and most respected brothers, we continue with the discussion of the letter written by Hazrat Imam Ghazali Rahmatullah Alayh to a student of his who had spent many, many years studying the various branches and sciences of deen. And after having qualified and separated from him, then in a letter to him, he requests some nasihat. Now it's obvious and very clear that this person did not really require any detailed nasihat, because he had studied the whole Quran Sharif and the tafsir of the Quran Sharif. He had studied the Hadith Sharif, he had studied fiqh and jurisprudence, he had studied all the various sciences, so he was a very, very qualified person. But seeking nasihat meant that after having learned so much, for my practical life, what is essential and necessary, give me in a nutshell, or give me some comprehensive nasihat. Imam Ghazali Rahmatullah Alayh discussed many things in his letter, which we have already discussed some aspects of. I think we had stopped at the discussion of an incident which Imam Ghazali Rahmatullah Alayh mentions in that letter, of another ustad, of another great shaykh, Hazrat Shaqiq Balkhi Rahmatullah Alayh, in whose company Hazrat Hatim Asam Rahmatullah Alayh had spent some 33 years. Now this incident and the story also you may have heard many a times, but every person has a different way of expressing it and explaining it. So I'm explaining it to you for my own benefit and for your benefit. So Hazrat Hatim Asam Rahmatullah Alayh, when he was departing, Hazrat Shaqiq Balkhi Rahmatullah Alayh, that great wali of Allah and that great shaykh and ustad of his, he said, 33 years you have spent and so much of knowledge you have acquired. Now tell me, what have you learnt? What have you really learnt in the 33 years? So he stated that I have learnt 8 things. Just 8 things I have learnt. So straight away his ustad said, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. It seems like you wasted my good time. 33 years and you only learnt 8 things. But in any case, now that you are going and we will be separating and parting, so explain to me what are the 8 lessons that you have learnt. He says, the first lesson which I learnt is that every person seems to have got an attachment to something or the other in this world. Every person likes something dearly of his possessions. I'm giving an explanation that every person, he seems to like very dearly something or the other of his possessions. Whether it is his car, whether it is his building, whether it is the funds that he has stored up in some bank in Switzerland or some other part of the world, or whether this person has got some oil wells, or he has got some yacht somewhere in some beach and holiday resort, whatever it is, but the person seems to be attached, or it is some woman that he has given his heart to. So he says, when I looked at all these things, I found that all these things, they separate from the person. At the time of death, they all separate from the person. So either this person will separate from them, or they are going to separate from him. But I haven't seen anybody taking all these things with them to their graves. No person has taken his palace to the grave. No king has taken his crown to the grave. No queen has taken her crown to the grave. And all the pearls and diamonds and jewelry and whatever they were displaying in their lives and considered that to be a status symbol, nothing was taken with them. They all went empty-handed. Therefore, the grave is the best wa'iz, the best speech. If a person wants to listen to, then go and listen to the silence of the grave. The best speech that you can listen to is from the silence of the grave. It gives a big speech, if only we have the heart to take a lesson from that speech. those people who had everything, but they returned empty-handed. So he says, when I saw this condition, yesarae dehar musafiro ba khuda kisi ka makan nahi, yesarae dehar musafiro ba khuda kisi ka makan nahi, jo muqeem isme the kal yahan kahin aaj unka nishaan nahi. It is like a musafir khana. I always give the explanation that it is like a timeshare apartment, that where the person has got a limited amount of time, and at the end of that time he has to vacate that apartment. Although he has got some share in it, and he can make use of the facilities whilst he is there. He can make use of the facilities. There's a stove there, or there's a air conditioner there, there's beds there, there's cupboards there, there's everything there. So this person, whilst he has got that period of time, he is entitled to make use of it. But he too, although he has got a time share, but he has got no right to abuse any of those facilities which are provided. The person can say that I've got a share, therefore I am making use. But listen to carefully what I am saying, that he can make use of those facilities. But because he has got a share for a certain period of time, therefore he cannot abuse any of those facilities. Now if this person says, I've got a share, so therefore I can use the microwave oven as I please and damage it, or he can take the cupboards and move them around or destroy some of the property that is there, or he damages some other facilities, then the person will be charged. Although he has got some share there, but he will still be charged by the management that he had no right to damage. In the same way, my brothers, we are on this earth, we have got a time share. We are here for a certain period of time. So we have got the rights. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has given us the rights to use the facilities which he has provided. The comforts which Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala provides, he has made it permissible for us to make use of. But everything must be in accordance with the management rules. That there are rules and instructions that this is how you should make use whilst you are making use of this timeshare apartment. In the same way, in this world we have got direction that this is how you should make use of your wealth, this is how you should make use of your eyes, this is how you should make use of your ears and your tongues, and this is how you should make use of your businesses and your incomes and your properties and whatever else Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has provided in this world. This is how you should make use of it. If you make use of it in that manner, then you will be even rewarded. But if not, then you will be punished. So my brothers, we must take a lesson from all these things. Therefore, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said that my Rabb specifically instructed me and ordered me 9 things. And of the 9 things, one was the very famous, it is a very famous hadith which I have mentioned many a times. The first part of it is a lesson for all of us, in which Rasulullah Paak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam says that my Rabb ordered me that I must fear him in privacy and in public. In my private life and in my public life, in both situations I must fear my Rabb. It is just like that person who is in that private apartment of his. At that time also he must fear Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. And when he is in public, then too he must fear Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. That means he must not do anything against Allah and his Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam's commands and instructions and teachings. It's not that only in public we behave like very pious and righteous people. Then afterwards when we are in our homes, then we behave like animals and monkeys. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala is watching us everywhere. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, in that hadith, one of the things he mentioned is that my nazar must be nazar of ibrat, that I must take a lesson from everything that I see. We are seeing so many things, but we hardly take any lessons. Just now, a few days ago, or a few nights ago, there was what we term as the eclipse of the moon. Now, how much of lesson did we take from the eclipse of the moon? Everybody was interested in just knowing whether we can see with our naked eyes, or we must use some glasses to even see the darkness. That's what they were interested in. And women folk who were pregnant wanted to know whether they are allowed to cut onions and tomatoes and potatoes with knives whilst they are pregnant and there's an eclipse of the moon. Jahalat and ignorance is at its height. As I mentioned, that our ignorance is at such a level that if only Rasulullah Paak sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his sahaba kiram ridwanullahi alaihim ajma'in had to come to the world now and ask us about our knowledge of Islam, then we do not know what they will declare us to be. I think I mentioned in one of my majlises, and a very true incident, that a person came to me and he said that, Maulana, I'm looking for another wife. My wife, I divorced her and my iddat is over. So I asked him, your iddat is over or her iddat is over? He says, no, my iddat is over. I said, but the men folk don't have to sit in iddat. He says, but I was told 40 days I have to sit in the masjid. So I spent my 40 days in one masjid in East, I won't mention the place. He says, and now I am here. Now we can imagine what kind of ignorance. Or in Bangladesh, when I went there, I was taken to a very remote area. And the alim there says that the first janazah that took place, when I had to go there, then I saw that they are taking a saw and they are cutting his right hand off. So when I questioned them that why are you cutting the right hand of this dead person? They said that no, we have heard that on the day of Qiyamah, when the book of deed is given in the right hand, then the person, they were cutting his left hand. They were cutting his left hand out. So he says that when I questioned them, they said that I have heard that on the day of Qiyamah, when the book of deeds will be given, if it is received in the right hand, the person will be successful and he will get entry into Jannat. But if he receives it in his left hand, then he is going to go into the fire of hell. So we rather cut his hand out from here, so he doesn't receive it in his left hand. That is our state of ignorance. So we must take a lesson. Yes, I was talking about the eclipse of the moon. That we should take a lesson from that. That when does the eclipse take place? When the earth comes between the sun and the moon, then there's an eclipse, there's a darkness. Because we know that the moon hasn't got its own light. It is a reflection of the light of the sun. As some poet said very beautifully about Rasul Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Unke rukh se tu jalwe chura kar jagmagata hai dunya ko shabbar. Unke rukh se tu jalwe chura kar jagmagata hai dunya ko shabbar. Magar ye ahle nazar jaante hain khud hasi maahe kamil nahi hai. Whatever beauty you are seeing in actual fact because of Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's coming into this world. If Nabi Alayhi Salatu Wasallam did not come into this world, you wouldn't have seen beauty in anything. But I'm not going to an explanation of that. So here too, the reflection of the sun, the moon is stealing the light of the sun and lighting up the night. So now this earth that came in between, it created darkness. Brothers, that is exactly our situation. We should take a lesson from that eclipse. That how much of darkness is on our hearts is because our nafs has come in between our hearts and between Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. The more our nafs, our passions, our evil desires, our evil inclinations, our temptations towards evil, and in fact our indulgence in evil, our indulgence in stealing, in gambling, in fornication, in adultery, in any kind of crime and vice, that is that earth which is coming in between the sun and the moon. And it is creating the darkness. The whole night is becoming dark. The moon, although it was bright, but now suddenly there's total darkness. Now how much of the earth comes between the sun and the moon, that much of darkness will come. In the same way, how much of our nafs comes between us, our hearts and Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, that much of darkness will come into our hearts. The person who indulges in more sins, more darkness comes in his heart. The more his life becomes restless, the more he becomes completely full of anxieties and worries and restlessness. And every time that he commits a sin, then shaitan puts another carrot dangling in front of him, that you haven't enjoyed yourself much as yet, there is some more still to go. One young person told me just after the 29th night, just a day or two after Ramadan, he says that, Maulana, after attending your programs, I could relate to what you are saying. He says, I used to go to the raves and I used to go to this party and that party and my life was full of vice and evil and sins. But he says, I could relate to what you are saying because I was full of restlessness. There was absolutely no peace in my life until I attended your programs. He says, why? Because every time that we went to a party, we thought, no, this is not enough. There is still something more. Every time the person commits adultery or fornication, he says, that's not enough. There's still something more. I haven't enjoyed fully. There could be more enjoyment in the next one that I will commit. And in this way, shaitan will take on that person and he will lead him and drag him along until finally he dumps him into the fire of hell, or in this world he dumps him into the gutters, and the person suffers such restlessness and such anxieties and worries that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala only have mercy on. Brothers, when I mention certain things, it is not just fairy tales. The day after Eid, a friend of mine tells me, he received a telephone call from the police station that a person Muslim person has passed away in a massage parlor, in that filthy, dirty state he has passed away, and now we must come and pick up his body, day after Eid. But just to keep the respect of that person, it had to be camouflaged that way he was found. Who are we playing with? We are playing with the might of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. We take it for granted that sinning is something that is casual, it is the norm of the time, it is something cool, as they say, to indulge in it. But this is going to be the end result. So the more our nafs, the more our indulgence in sins, the more the darkness comes onto the heart. And the more we are going to remove this earth from between the sun and the moon, that means from Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala's tajalli and his noor, the more we are going to remove this nafs, the more the light will come onto that heart. Now sometimes it's the first moon, sometimes second, sometimes third, and finally it ends up with the 15th. It depends on how much of mujahada the person makes, how much of striving and how much of suppressing of this nafs he does. It is not sufficient to just read tasbih and make zikr and make some tilawat of the Quran Sharif, or to do a little bit of deen work and think that our nafs, our islah has been made. The nafs is not easy to make islah of, because the nafs is a combination of so many things that are in there, of which we have to make islah. There's jealousy there, there's pride there, there's malice there, there's greed there, there's evil passions and desires there. And for a removal of all these things, there is nothing else except the company of the righteous and the pious ones. And none of us have got the right to claim that we are righteous and pious. We should consider ourselves to be the most sinful ones on the surface of the earth. But Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has kept certain signs by means of which we recognize the pious and the righteous. So go and choose their company and spend some time in their company, and not just go and press their legs and put oil on their head. Tell them that these are my sicknesses, these are my diseases, and I want a cure for this. Then see after that what you find in the heart, what kind of light comes into that heart. So we were discussing that letter of Hazrat Imam Ghazali rahmatullah alayhi, in which Hazrat Shaqiq Balkhi rahmatullah alayhi, when his student Hazrat Hatim Asam was departing and going, then he said that I learned only 8 lessons. And from the 8, the first one he said is that when I looked at the things of the world I found people attached to, then I saw that all those things either part from that person during his lifetime, or when he dies, then of course everything is separated from him. So either he separates or they will separate. So I made my companion of life Amal Saleh. He said Amal Saleh is what I made my companion of my life. I really attached my heart to Amal Saleh, meaning that all those things which Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has declared as permissible, I made use of whatever Allah ta'ala declared as permissible in accordance with his will and wish. So now that doesn't mean that the person, when he makes Amal Saleh, righteous deeds, his companion, so he is deprived of the worldly namats, or that he has to now walk about naked on the streets, or the person cannot live under the shelter in a home, or he cannot own a nice car or wear good clothes or wear a good shoe. Nothing of that kind. Islam is so beautiful. That is why I repeatedly say that if only Allah Ta'ala gives us the insight and the wisdom to understand what Islam is, we will see nothing but beauty from all sides in Islam. Nothing else Allah Ta'ala has made prohibited and haram except those things which cause us harm, cause our families harm, cause our society harm, or cause the nation harm. That's all. Now, where can we find another Allah like that? Who knows us so well, and he knows our nature, he has created us. So therefore he has made permissible so many things. The only thing we are asked to restrain from are those things which are harmful to us. Now is that something very serious for us, that Allah Ta'ala is prohibiting us from those things which are harmful, and we say no, we must indulge in it, because Allah Ta'ala, oh Allah, you do not know that our enjoyment and pleasure and entertainment lies in haram. At present our enjoyment, pleasure is in haram. This is why we are putting so much of emphasis on this, that it's easy to go around talking about the world, what is happening. Everybody wants to make islah of the entire world, but this 6-foot body of ours we don't want to make islah of. Look at our relationship with our wives. How many phone calls we get of bashing the wives, smashing their heads against the cupboards, and treating them as dirt, as pieces of dirt. I don't say that those wives are not at fault. Many a times it is their fault, because they too have a very fast tongue. But what I am saying, if Allah Ta'ala made us men, then what should be our attitude towards them? Should we treat them in that manner? A person bashes his wife on the 27th night and then he says, I'm going to the mosque because a lot of sawab. So this is what we are talking about. What is our relationship with our customers? Does our client feel comfortable when he is dealing with us, that this Muslim person with a beard and this Muslim person with the outwardly pious attire, then he is going to deal with me in a very, very straight manner? Or is it that there is such fear now that if this person is doing deen work, he may be the first one to take me for a big ride? But of course, that doesn't mean that those who are not doing deen work, then it absolves them. But what I am saying is that the more piety we project, the more it must be in our hearts. And I am saying this because we are getting cases upon cases now. So I am talking about any Muslim, whether he is in deen work or is not in deen work. But when the client is coming to him, when he is trading with him, when he is buying from him, when he is giving him money to pay for his account, does he feel comfortable that I am trading with a Muslim? The Muslim who is not going to cheat, the Muslim who is going to reveal if there is any defect in the article, the Muslim if he's selling me a car and he knows what are the weak spots, then he's going to reveal it. Or he's going to tell me, I'm selling it to you as is. You take it, go and have it checked up by your mechanic, and then if you are satisfied, then you buy it. The Muslim that I'm buying my ticket from to go for Hajj, then I know that I'm dealing with a person who is reliable, reputable, and he is not going to make me swear and curse him when I'm in Makkah Sharif. As I say that, I'm not talking about all the agents. But as I'm saying, out of experience, many people have had experiences. And therefore, I said many times in my Hajj bayans that there are many agents. I'm not talking about all agents. There are some extremely good agents. But there are many agents that when they sell you a package, then they make you 5-star promises. But in reality, they are speaking 6-star lies. And afterwards, when the Haji discovers it, he gives them 7-star curses. So what I'm saying is that Amal-e-Saleh means that the person in his whole life now, he has got righteousness and piety and taqwa. That in his relationship with his wife, with his children, with his neighbors, with his family, with his customers, with his students, if he's a teacher, and the students with the teacher, if they are pupils, everywhere the same rule will apply, Amal-e-Saleh. And Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, in fact, has promised establishment of government on this land. Allah Ta'ala has promised that He will give them government on this land if they have Amal-e-Saleh. Iman and Amal-e-Saleh are such things. There's no time to explain it today. Inshallah, if Allah Ta'ala gives me life until next week, then we will continue. But on Amal-e-Saleh, so many promises have been made. The very simple, short surah of the Quran Sharif, Wal-Asr, Innal Insana Lafi Khusr, what is mentioned there? Allah Ta'ala is taking a qasam on time. And it says, mankind is at a loss, except for four kinds of people. إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا, those who have got iman, and immediately after that, وَعَمَلِ الصَّالِحِ. إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ. So this amal or salih means that the person is eating, he is eating according to sharia. The person is wearing clothes, he is wearing according to sharia. The person is earning his living, is going to the bazaars and marketplaces, he is trading, he is doing it according to sharia. The person is getting married or is getting his children married, he is doing it according to sharia. He is conducting or having a walima, he is doing it according to sharia. If he is running a radio station, he is doing it according to sharia. Then only it's Amal-e-Saleh. But if we just take the name of Islam everywhere, Islamic walima, Islamic marriage, Islamic this, Islamic that, but then there is no sign of Islam there, then in the eye of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, it has got no esteem and no worth, no matter how much we praise ourselves that I did this and I did that and I did that. But in the eye of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, it is of no consequence. In fact, it becomes very frightening when many people conduct things in a completely un-Islamic manner. And then they say, Allah shukar and ihsan, that Allah made it very, very successful. Totally haram indulgence, and they say Allah shukar and ihsan, because we had such a large crowd and a big turnout, Allah's great ihsan and fazal that He made it very, very successful. We should just ask ourselves one question, that if Rasulullah Paak Sarasam had to be at that function of ours, would he have been comfortable in that function? If the Sahaba-e-Kiram had to be at that function of ours, which we titled as Islamic, would they have been comfortable with all that photography and filming and videoing and our girls and women and all dancing? If not, then we should make tawbah and istighfar. We should make tawbah and istighfar. We all are weak. We have got many shortcomings and many weakness. But let us not just say narrow-minded and conservative and outdated and orthodox and living in the camel age. Let us look at the Quran Sharif and the Sunnah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam and then see whether it is successful or not. Just massive crowd is not success. Some 60 million people will be jumping and diving into the waters of the Ganga. And they will be dipping there and they will be saying that all their sins will be forgiven. Now where can we gather 50 million people? So will that be successful? So before we say anything, like the walima has taken place where there's so much of intermingling, there's so much of haram, and then the person says, very successful. Why very successful? Because the 7-course meal was served on time, everything was up to date, and everything was on according to schedule. So now is that success? So whenever we say a program is successful, at that time just ask ourselves one question. If my beloved Rasul sallallahu alayhi wasallam, who taught us the deen, if he was present in this function, would he have said this was successful? Brothers, forgive me if sometimes I become emotional, what do I do? May Allah tabarak wa ta'ala give me, give you, and the entire ummah the tawfiq, to remove that earth which has come between the sun and the moon. To remove that nafs and the evil inclinations and the indulgence in sins between our hearts and Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, which has brought darkness in our hearts and now we cannot even see light. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin.